This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello and welcome into the Take the North podcast. Along with Dan Weeder from the Chicago Tribune, I am Mark Grody from The Score. Dan and I both at Halas Hall. As we are recording this, the Bears are looking ahead again, trying desperately to turn the page as they move on to the Minnesota Vikings. And Dan, I mean, we still haven't finished all the cleanup from last week as the final missed field goal came into heavy focus today.
Yeah, I was telling Studs before we started recording that I would love a week where we weren't in cleanup mode with the mops and the buckets and everything, trying to get everything cleaned up. It'd be nice to progress forward in a week where you could focus exclusively on the next game and that the next game mattered more than these ones do right now because of where the Bears are. But alas, here we are.
I promise you we will have some of that in this podcast in terms of talking about what is real on this team and what the Bears are going to need to do to beat Minnesota as well. But let's get to our opening drive.
It's time for the opening drive.
Well, it was a heartbreaker last week at Soldier Field against Green Bay when Cairo Santos had his 46-yard field goal blocked at the last second. Sudden death for the Bears. Bears walk off the field with their fourth straight loss in completely dramatic fashion, their second dramatic loss this year. And today was the first time that we had a chance to talk to Richard Hightower about it. There's been much talk throughout the week, and Dan will add some texture on this here in just a little bit. Much talk throughout the week about the operation. Matt Eberflus said that the interior linemen needed to be tighter and better on their blocks. He also said, Matt Eberflus paraphrasing, that there was no thought of trying to get the ball to the right hash and that they were completely comfortable with the distance, not running an extra play, all of that stuff. So Richard Hightower, the special teams coach, has been hearing about all of this since Sunday. Since we don't get to talk to the special teams coordinator before that, this was his day, as we're recording Thursday, to talk about it. And I don't usually do this, but I want you guys to hear his opening statement, which was, Dan, was dramatic. Here is Richard Hightower at the podium today.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. All right. I have to address y'all like the players if you want to say good afternoon. All right. Obviously, extremely disappointed with the way the game ended. First and foremost, extremely disappointed for our players. But I'm also disappointed for support staff, our entire organization, and for the city of Chicago. As I always tell you all, for any success or any failure of any field goal, it starts with the protection, the operation, and the execution. And when those things are right, you have a successful field goal. When those things are wrong, your field goal isn't what you want it to be. And that starts and ends with me. And that was not the desired result that we wanted on that play. However, I am excited about the look in the guys' eyes and us turning the page and an opportunity to respond versus Minnesota.
Richard Hightower right there. It starts and ends with me. I was actually not in the room for that, Dan. I don't know if you were.
I was the first one to say good afternoon. So and then no one else said it. And then everybody, and then we got admonished for not saying good afternoon loudly.
We've been admonished by a few people this year for not saying good afternoon. I think it was Ryan Bates when he gathered us around the first time we talked to him. He comes in and we were out in the hallway because they set up the mic stand out there, and he said good afternoon. Nobody said anything, and then he said it again, good afternoon. And so I like you had to do the hero work to get him going. But let's start with that. We'll get more specific with Hightower here in a second. What did you think being in the room with Richard Hightower and the opening statement there? And this is, like I said, this is a week's worth of pent-up emotion that Richard Hightower is dealing with and expressing right there.
After we hear a little more, I'll give you a little bit more from me, but it felt to me a little bit like somebody standing up to introduce themselves as the new coach of a football team. It really did. There was a level of, I don't know what the word is, like grandness to the presentation that felt a little bit off kilter with what we're actually doing here today and what we do here on every Thursday. And so that was my first impression. We can get into more of the details of the play, what it meant, and why all this is under the microscope this week, because I do think it speaks to a larger, much more important issue that's going on right now inside the walls here at 1920 Football Drive.
Well, let's get to it then, because the two biggest things that we as reporters have been questioning is the communication before the kick, what's being talked about, what's being expressed in terms of distance, hash mark, all of that. So Hightower will start talking about that process, and then he will be asked about the hash mark and how much that means. So let's get a little deeper here with Richard Hightower, the Bears special teams coach.
Yeah, it's something we always talk about. We talk about that all the time, always constant communication of kick lines, monster kick lines, everything. That's always talked about, not only right before the series starts, but that's talked about at the start of the game. That's talked about in the offseason. That's talked about every Wednesday and Thursday when we do 2 minute. Like, that's always talked about. What happened in that situation was a team decision. And we thought, in the best interest of the team, and Flus has spoken to that already, and he talked to you guys about the risk there. So the best interest of the team was to kick it. And when they call field goal, it's my job as a coach to get that executed. Period.
Does the hash mark matter in that left, right, with the wind, whatever, what Carroll likes, does that matter in that situation?
Doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter, because when they call field goal, we got to go out there and perform. That's what matters. Going out there and perform, getting the desired result. I can't allow myself to have excuses. I don't deal in that world. This is a results-based business, and you have to deal in result. In fact, correct what happened, move on, use it to your advantage, and then let's go to work. And that's the mind state I'm in. All my energy and my focus is on beating Minnesota. That's what my energy's on and my focus.
I mean, I guess Richard Hightower is saying what he has to say, but he's wrong, because it does matter. It does matter where the ball is. It does matter how close the ball is to the end zone. It matters where the ball is lined up. And, you know, he can say all of that, but we talk so much about the communication in this building and the players and how much they communicate and how they impose their will. Are the coaches not allowed to in that moment? Dan, I know you've been working really hard on this all week. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I think what Richard Hightower told us today is that his input was taken and discarded, essentially, and that at that point, when they decide that they don't want to risk the bad things that can happen, which we documented multiple times earlier in the week, they just decided that the kicker can kick from anywhere, and it's a team decision. Those are Richard Hightower's words. It's a team decision, which means it's Matt Eberflus's decision to make that call, and he made a call that put his kicker on the hash mark where he didn't want to be. When we talk about details and the fine line between winning and losing in the NFL, you have to be on top of those details. I don't know that the Bears are consistently enough, and this one example is just the latest sort of exhibit of evidence that is thrown onto a pile that says, why aren't the Bears meeting these game on the line moments more frequently? Well, it's because they don't really have their stuff together, to put it bluntly, right? And I think that's kind of where we stand with this. Richard Hightower is falling on the sword there gracefully and you know, understandably today. But look, I stood in front of Cairo Santos's locker on Wednesday afternoon and talked to him all about what goes into being prepared as a kicker in those moments. And I tweeted out a long thread that described where he came from. And to be very clear and emphatic, Cairo said he's supposed to make that kick from anywhere. He's highly paid as an NFL kicker to make game-winning kicks under pressure circumstances. And where he was kicking that football from did not impact the block that came right up the middle. But there are still details here, and his preference is to kick from the right hash mark, and he wasn't placed there because the Bears didn't take care of something either from a coaching standpoint or a player execution standpoint. And here we are 4 days later still cleaning it up and trying to figure out what it all means. I think it's significant this week, Mark, because the Bears are going to play a Vikings team with a head coach who was hired 20 days after Matt Eberflus was, who's got a record of 28-16 versus Matt's 14-30. And when we talk about Kevin O'Connell, we're constantly saying, oh, man, the Vikings, they're overachieving, they're overachieving, they're overachieving. Well, what do overachievers get their overachievement from? Being in position to capitalize on one-score games, game-on-the-line moments, doing things better than people expect them to, and they've done it consistently for 3 years. The Bears, on the other hand, have done it inconsistently for 3 years, and that's why we're constantly in this circle. Colleen Kane had said to me coming out of the Richard Hightower press conference today that she didn't feel like she got a super clear answer on what was supposed to happen in the communication process about the hash marks. I said, no, you did get a pretty clear answer. Richard said that he communicated. Matt made a decision to do something else. The kick got blocked. And now they're all on the hot seat. That's it. Four bullet points.
It really is. I mean, like, why not? Head coaches don't know anything about kickers. We know that. They know that. This is a specialty unto its own.
Well, and let me also make this very clear, that this isn't some, like, social media conspiracy theorist thing that people are trying to throw out there to burn the Bears coaching staff. The leading scorer in the history of the franchise brought up this concern on the Marquee Network. The guy who's played more games than any other Chicago Bear in history brought this up on 670 The Score. This is Robbie Gold and Patrick Manley expressing their disdain for the way the end of game situation was run on Sunday afternoon. Those guys aren't just some nincompoops calling in with a theory on Sports Talk Radio.
Right. It's common sense stuff. And we have a guy who has, Richard Hightower, has very specific expertise in special teams, as do the players that are working for him and with him. And if you're not going to listen to those guys in a department that you just, and this is not me ripping Flus for not understanding kickers and special teams, that's pretty similar with a lot of coaches in the league. They just sort of leave that to the special teams unit. Then if in that crucial moment in winning a game, you're not going to listen to the guy with expertise is just baffling to me. And then you're right. We're forced with this mess here where Hightower is up there falling on the sword, being a little bit disingenuous because he's got it begins and ends with me. It's on me. It's on me, on me. And then we're not really getting too many specifics out of all of that. So
I like Richard Hightower, Grody.
Yeah,
and I
do too.
He handles himself well on a weekly basis. And I think he's been very good over time at explaining things that happened. Today felt a little theatrical to me, and it left me a little bit unsettled with the way that back and forth went, because it was so, you know, contrary to how the normal Thursday back and forth goes in there, where it's a very laid back atmosphere. And this just felt like it had more injected into it unnecessarily. And it was just kind of odd, if you ask me.
No. Look, I mean, if we're just talking about Richard Hightower as a person and as an interview subject, he's been absolutely terrific. And yeah, I think he was put in a bad position, and I don't understand why, if they're going to listen to players, they're not going to listen to their own coaches. So let's leave that at that for right now. And as I promised you, let's actually get into a little bit about Bears versus Vikings, which is going down this Sunday in our What to Watch segment.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Weedsy, what are we looking at? Give me three things that we should be looking at, Bears and Minnesota Vikings.
Center stage, first thing, 100%, Thomas Brown and parentheses Caleb Williams versus Brian Flores. I mean, you talk about a chess match this weekend that is going to be pivotal to the outcome of this football game. It's a Bears play caller in his second game at the controls trying to prepare a rookie quarterback to face a defense that is going to challenge him in ways he's not been challenged yet. And we talked about it earlier in the week. Caleb talked about going to Arizona and seeing this defense that was kind of one of one with the way that they throw things at you before the snap and change things after the snap. But this is that times two, as you've heard me say. And so you've got a situation here where Brian Flores is going to bring a bunch of bodies up to the line of scrimmage, and he's going to make you as a quarterback try to figure out what you're seeing, and then you're going to catch the football, and you're going to have to figure out, okay, where is the extra pressure coming from and how do I respond to it, and or are they not bringing the extra pressure that I thought they were bringing, and now they're dropping back into coverage, and now I'm facing a three-man rush, and I got to figure out where to go with the football because they're firmly back in coverage. Every single snap is going to be a challenge for Caleb Williams. I said it's going to be like trying to solve a Sudoku puzzle with a timer on it every time you say, sit up and get the football, because that's what it's going to be like here. The Vikings defense, number one in the NFL against the run, so you can't lean into that to take as much pressure off you as you think you might be able to. They've got a linebacker that played for Flores in Miami and Andrew Van Ginkle, who came over this year and has been an absolute chess piece for them. He's got 8 sacks, leads the team. He's got 13 tackles for loss. He's got 2 interception returns for a touchdown, and he's not the only guy that they have. You can talk about Harrison Phillips and Harrison Smith and Blake Cashman and Josh Metellus and all of these different pieces that Brian Flores has to utilize. Good luck, Matt Eberflus, Thomas Brown, Caleb Williams, of trying to make things simple on the starting quarterback to deal with all this, because it's going to be a fascinating cat and mouse game.
Oh, yeah. And I was looking at some of the numbers. You're right. Van Ginkle has 8 sacks. Jonathan Greenard with 8 sacks. Yep. Patrick Jones II has 7 sacks. So they are creating opportunities for multiple guys. It's not just one guy. And then when you start to get tricky with bringing the secondary as well, that I love this. I'm conflicted. I love this challenge for Caleb Williams, because he's going to have to think, and I get the feeling he digs these kinds of challenges and the cerebral part of the game, which hasn't always matched on the field for sure. His intellect seems real, but he is not caught up all the time on the field. I do think it's going to be rough for him early. I think it's going to be ugly at times, but I think that Caleb probably will figure it out on a few plays. Let me play, before we get to your number two, just because we have it right here. Thomas Brown, the new offensive coordinator, spoke and was asked about dealing with that blitzing defense of Minnesota.
What's the most important coaching point in terms of going up against this Minnesota defense that obviously brings a ton of heat?
You know, I just wish I had one. There's a ton of them. You know, I think regardless of position, down in distance, it's hard to find weaknesses in this defense. They do a really good job. I don't know Brian Flores all that well, but I've met him a couple of times. I think one of the biggest compliments you can get as a coach is your unit takes on your personality. And so they are aggressive. They are attacking. They are opportunistic. And so it's going to be important for us to go into the game, to me, always first and foremost, like play with no fear. Like, we're not going to coach scared. They're going to play scared. And so to me, that starts first with preparation, because fear and faith only exist in the future. So why fear what hasn't even happened yet? So I think about our guys being able to have confidence in the game plan, to build that based on preparation throughout the week. Then on game, they let it rip, man, and they continue to keep swinging.
I mean, I like that idea. I hope that letter rip is something that Thomas Brown says a lot to Caleb Williams. But, Dan, I just have a feeling it's going to take a quarter or two for Caleb to get comfortable against that defense. And we saw it last year with Justin Fields.
Guess what? The Vikings also lead the NFL in interceptions. They've got 16 of them. They've picked off, I think, six quarterbacks multiple times. So you've got a challenge here. And if you make a mistake, you just got to wipe the slate clean, which we've seen Caleb be pretty good at. But that's going to be a challenge as well. I will say this about Thomas Brown. His presence is infectious, right? And you feel that charisma and that fearless mentality that with which he wants to approach the game is evident every single day. And you understand why players feed off that, because even in that short bite, which was just a small sampling of what we got from Thomas Brown on Thursday, you felt the energy and you felt like, all right, let's go.
I was sitting there thinking when he came, because this is the first time that we've talked to him or it wasn't this big dramatic getting to know you session. I mean, we're still getting to know him, but you know what I mean? Last week was him replacing Shane Waldron. So there was a lot to it. Today was the first time I was like, oh, I think I like this guy. And you know how cynical I am about it. And the chances of Thomas Brown actually succeeding are probably pretty low, just if we're being realistic and relativity. But he is right to the point. He does have specific ideas in mind. He's not going to reveal every single thing, but he seems about as prepared as anybody. And then you add that energy that he has with the players and he has with us as well. So honestly, like, I really hope that this guy succeeds, but you have to keep that. We just seen too much for me to sit here and say that he's going to be great, but he does seem to have a plan. Dan, let's get to your number two on what to watch.
This is a big one. In many weeks, this would be number one, but it's number two, and it's JJ versus JJ. And the JJ in Minnesota, his name is Justin Jefferson, and he's a pretty damn good wide receiver. The JJ here at Hallis Hall is Jalen Johnson, and he's a pretty damn good cornerback. They're going to get to go up against each other now here for the first time since Sean Desai was your defensive coordinator here at Hallis Hall.
Oh,
2021
man.
Was the last time a Bears-Vikings game included both these guys healthy, which is hard to believe. Jalen Johnson has been looking forward to this matchup for a while. I don't know what Justin Jefferson's sentiments are in Minnesota about what he thinks about the guy that he's going to be across from a handful of times, if not more, on Sunday afternoon. But you talk about a marquee matchup between two of the league's better players. It should be fun to watch, and I think both guys' competitive juices will be flowing.
Yeah, no, I honestly did not realize how long it had been since Jalen Johnson had faced Justin Jefferson. And let me take you into the locker room and just the things that he was saying. And he will make it abundantly clear that he hasn't had a ton of experience against him. Here's Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, he's one of the most consistent guys in the league, for sure. So he's been doing at a high level since he came in the league. So, I mean, he's definitely one of those guys.
Where is Justin Jefferson? Is he, like, top of your list of toughest guys to cover? Like, where does he rank?
I haven't covered him in a few years, so I don't know.
Okay.
I'll see. I mean, I'd still like him as the number one receiver, but as far as tough to cover, I haven't covered him in a few years, so I'll see.
Yeah, usually Jalen's got like power rankings of guys. He doesn't seem to play that game as much. I mean, that's just the competitive juices. Like, he's not going to give out the flowers that he gave to receivers probably in his first 2 years.
So just so you know, Justin Jefferson missed 7 games last year with a hamstring injury. Jalen Johnson played in both of those Bears Vikings matchups when Justin Jefferson was gone. Jalen has missed games with a shoulder injury, with COVID, with a quad injury, and a broken ring finger against the Vikings. The two games that he has played where Justin Jefferson has also played, Jefferson had 8 catches, 135 yards in 2020, and he had 5 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown in the finale of 2021. This is a guy who also had 12 for 154 and 10 catches and 138 yards in the first half of that game in 2022. Jalen Johnson wasn't in for that game, but he has a track record of dicing the Bears up a little bit. And so they better have a plan for it, because if you don't, he can single-handedly take you apart.
Right. And, you know, Tyreek Stevenson and Terrell Smith and Kyler Gordon are all going to come into play and trying to stop him. Gentlemen, I have to, we are at Halas Hall, and I have to go to another Halas Hall meeting out here right now. We're,
can you just give us a score prediction before you leave?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The score prediction. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my goodness here. Bears and Vikings this Sunday. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I am going to pick the Bears to win this game. I think the Bears are going to get on track. Yes, the Minnesota defense has been dominant, but the offense has slowed just a little tick. So I'm going to go with Minnesota winning this game, or excuse me, the Bears beating Minnesota 24-17. And I actually will leave on this note because it's hilarious. Jalen Johnson, talking about Sam Darnold, you should be able to hear the question asked by our good friend Deion Miller, but this is fantastic. Here's Jalen Johnson on Sam Darnold.
Yeah. All right, so what has made Sam Darnold so consistent this season, and what have you seen him do?
I feel like he hasn't been too consistent. I feel like he started off hot, and then I feel like the biggest thing is just the turnovers. I feel like you've been having a lot of turnovers lately, and you can see how it affects the team on tape. So, I mean, so overall for us, we want to be able to be disruptive and get some turnovers because we know that changes the dynamics of the offense.
Do you look at that as from the defensive standpoint and see the tells and see how those interceptions were made?
Yes and no. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you can't force a quarterback into bad decisions. He kind of gives them out. So, I mean, for us, just trying to be in the right position so when he does make bad decisions, we're in the spot to make a play.
Boom. It's just so classic, you know. I haven't seen any consistency out of this guy. So, no, but he's right. There is some vulnerabilities at this point. I don't think that he's going to melt and, you know, turn back into a pumpkin like everybody thinks Sam Darnold is going to do. But there have been a few cracks in the infrastructure recently. So, Bears win this game. Gentlemen, I hate to leave early, but I got to go. So, Dan, rock
on. Dan Stutzel, we'll rock it home. Attend to other duties, and we'll continue on here.
All right. All right, guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. I am the Scores Mark Rohde. See you later.
Studs, get on in here and let's finish our three things to watch for. Every once in a while, you got to audible, right? You got to ad lib. You got to do some things.
Tag team.
I'm going to give you my third thing to watch, and then you're going to give me your prediction.
All right.
Rohde brings up the introduction to Sam Darnold there. He hasn't been as consistent recently as he had been early in the season, but he had a really impressive start to the year. Three interceptions 3 weeks ago against Jacksonville, two a couple weeks ago against the Colts. And so if you can force him into those turnovers, you are going to be doing something to help your football team win a game. But the pass rush has to be part of that. And that's my third thing to watch because the Bears pass rush has been stagnant. Montez Sweat, 3.5 sacks on the entire season. That total's got to get up. The pressure has to get there more consistently. You have to find a way to affect Sam Darnold. And by the way, you have to affect him with a four-man rush because he's shown to be very, very effective against the blitz. A lot of people early in the season tested him with the blitz, and he went crazy on them and made good decisions and good throws and kept the chains moving and made big plays. So you're going to have to create a four-man rush consistently in this football game to get it done. I don't know if the Bears can do it because in recent weeks we've been going series after series after series waiting to figure out when the pass rush is going to awaken, and it just hasn't come alive. So that's number three, is just can they affect Sam Darnold with a consistent four-man pass rush?
And I think that they I think they're going to get home a little bit more this week than they were last week. But I agree, you know, it's funny, like the more that on the 670 to score in the Bernstein home show, the more we were digging into this, like kind of like you were saying, it's this weird thing with Sam Darnold where, like, the longer you make him hold the ball, the worse he seems to get. Like once, right. Once the play, yeah. And so it might, like, this, it might be a weird thing to say, but it's like, it, I don't want to say you don't need to rush him. Of course, you need to get after him and make him try to make those mistakes. But it's almost as if the Bears can play good enough zone defense.
Exactly.
That's when those mistakes are going to happen. And you know, a lot of that's going to be containing Justin Jefferson, of course. But yeah, you need to get after him more than you did. Like, you can't let him stand back there the way that you kind of almost got away with it against Jordan Love a week ago. He had a red zone turnover. You made a fourth down stop in the red zone as well. So, like, you kind of got away with it. But the Packers were able to move the ball fairly consistently, and their own mistakes kept them out of the end zone.
Bears observers should be familiar with the idea of a quarterback getting a little bit flummoxed by seeing zone all day. We watched it with Justin Fields. We watched it with Mitch Trubisky. We watched the struggles that mounted when it's like, oh God, where do I go with the football? Oh God. And then your offense just sort of gets stagnant and you're not able to create that flow and momentum that you need to get going. So it'll be really interesting to see if they can do it. We've got one Bears upset pick from Grody. Do we have a second? Can I hear a second? I'm the auctioneer here asking to see if you've got it.
You know what? Before we do that, I want to make sure we play this Montez Sweat sound because we're okay. on the pass rush issue. Yeah, and I know that he was asked this week about his own numbers being down. So here's Montez Sweat.
It gets to me a little bit. As pass rushers, we look at numbers, and we know that we're judged upon our numbers and stats like that. But I know it's just one bump in the road. Just got to keep going.
So why don't you think you are getting home as much?
Well, it's a multiple of reasons. You can't really pinpoint one reason, but yeah, it's a multiple of reasons.
Are you getting chipped so much that it's making it difficult to...
I mean, I wouldn't say that. I understand what comes with being the type of pass rusher I am. I'm going to get chips. I'm going to get slides. We have to find a plan around that and figure out how to get them down.
Do you feel like you've been figuring things out as you try to get after the quarterback? You said as they attack you, you're trying to adjust.
I mean, it's like a week-to-week thing. They come in bunches. So, I mean, I think we need to just figure things out as a front. It's not just me. It's a collective group that that needs to compete the one common goal.
We know you're not the type that's going to make any excuses with injuries, but obviously you've been on the injury report. You've been dealing with these injuries for a bit. Now, how much has that limited you to be your full form?
I mean, it comes with being a football player, knickknacks and all that type of stuff. I definitely have been on the injury report this year more than I'm used to, but it's no excuse.
Are you personally frustrated?
I mean, we on a, 3-4 game losing streak? I'm pretty fucking frustrated. So, yeah.
Is that a healthy anger that the defense kind of shares?
I think it's everybody in the locker room is sharing. The all common goal at the end of the day is just to win, whether that's with sacks or points. So either way it goes, we just want to be in the W column.
Thank you.
And that, Dan, is the beauty of being on a podcast. We can let those kind of words fly that we can't let on the radio. But yeah, that was good stuff from Montez.
The sounds of Bears PR great Danny Marchino in the background. Couple more, please. I love that when you get that little. We probably need to wrap this up soon. Before we get too far off the rails. But, I know it'll be interesting to see if he can affect this game on Sunday. And, again, like the Bears need to get off this losing skid sooner rather than later because I think everyone in the city shares Montez's frustration to some extent.
All right. So on that, we'll go ahead and do our predictions here, Dan. So we got the upset pick from Grody. And this is another one where I went back and forth pretty much all week about it. I had an internal crisis on this one on last week when I ended up picking the Bears over the Packers. Didn't work out for me. And so here's what I got for you this week. And I know you have a flair for the dramatic. So follow along and wait for the heel turn.
All right.
I think that the Bears offense is going to continue to play better. I really like the way that Thomas Brown seems to be approaching things. I think Caleb Williams got himself back on track and they seem to have a good connection together. So I'm not that worried about the offense. I think the defense is going to do enough to contain Justin Jefferson. You know, even probably maybe being down to their third safety in this game, Elijah Hicks dealing with the concussion. Jalen Johnson is still Jalen Johnson. I don't think he's going to be traveling, but I think they do enough to contain him, get a couple turnovers from Sam Darnold. And this game's going to be really close. What do the Bears do in close games? They lose. Vikings are going to win this one 24-20 because something will happen in the fourth quarter. But some kind of Matt Eberflus mistake. I don't know what it is. It's always different, but something's going to happen, and they're going to lose the game 24-20.
I wish I could share Grody's optimism, but I can't. I've got Vikings 19, Bears 13. I have questions. As much as I have been heartened by what Caleb Williams showed last week, by what Thomas Brown showed last week, by what the offense did to get going. This is a challenge that we experienced it last year multiple times with Justin Fields and for part of a game with Tyson Bagent. This defense is a mess for young quarterbacks, and it really, really takes you time to solve it and figure it out and get in a rhythm. And I think that's going to be the X factor in this football game. Bears offense isn't going to get going enough. The defense is going to play good, but not elite. And there you have it. You have the makings of a 19-13 Vikings win. You have a 5-game losing streak. You have a game in Detroit 4 days later. And oh boy, here we are again, right, Suds?
Yeah, and you know what, like the mantra that that we had on the Bernstein Home Show the last couple of days here was play well enough to make Matt Eberflus not a factor, and but I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, because the stuff around this team, you know, like, look, if the head coach wasn't what I think he is, I would be willing to pick the Bears, but I'm too far gone to have the kind of optimism and then winning this kind of game. It's very rare.
We talked a little bit ago about Kevin O'Connell, right? And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that the disparity in the Vikings in one score games under Kevin O'Connell and the Bears in one score games under Matt Eberflus. I wish I had those numbers directly in front of me, but I know it's insane. And so yeah, those are the types of things that creep into your head. I can't, in good conscience, pick the Bears again to win until they win. So I have to be wrong one of these weeks before I go ahead and pick them again, because I just, these last 4 weeks have been such a maddening experience in trying to figure out how this football team's going to find its winning formula, that they have to prove to me that they can find it before I can actually pick them.
And yeah, I have no doubt they'll win again, but I totally understand where you're coming from. So, all right, we'll go ahead and wrap things up with our 2-minute drill.
The 2-minute drill.
The 2-minute drill.
All right, Studs, first and foremost, some good news on the health front, where it looks like DeAndre Swift is trending in the right direction. We'll see how his groin progresses as the week goes on. But if he's able to get back on the football field for Sunday, that's a big boost to the Bears offense. Otherwise, you're pivoting in a direction where Roschon Johnson and Travis Homer will be the guys that will be taking the snaps in the backfield. That's obviously not something you'd love. So good news on that front as it relates to DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, he's going to be a key player for them to get back here, you know, especially if the game, you know, especially because the running backs in this game could play a huge role, especially as being just quick dump offs out of the backfield. Like, this is a game where you got to be aware and available, where if the rush is coming, like, he might get to you really fast. Caleb might get to you really fast. And so DeAndre Swift in space could be big for this one. Plus, you know, like, I think, like, if I were to take a choice between the two, I'd take Roschon Johnson in pass protection over DeAndre Swift. But DeAndre Swift's a willing pass blocker. And so having him back there, it would still be something you want, a veteran guy who understands at least where his assignment is probably going to be. So,
and you want him to be able to hit a screen or two here, right?
Like, yeah, and, yeah. And
hit a big play to lessen the pressure.
The screen game could be huge in this one. I don't want them to call 15 screens or wherever it was that, like, Luke Getsy called last year in this game, but because that was insane. But, you know, yeah, this is a game where you can get some screens going, you know, kind of like they did with DJ Moore last week, maybe more to DeAndre Swift and get things going. What else we got?
On the topic of running backs, had a good talk with Bears linebackers coach Dave Borgonzi. Aaron Jones isn't a new uniform in the NFC North, but he's still the same old Aaron Jones. Really good pass catcher out of the backfield, really good route runner, and Dave Borgonzi talked a lot about the strain that Aaron Jones' skill set will put on that middle unit, which is obviously T.J. Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds, and in the base defense when Jack Sanborn gets a crack to be in there. You got to find a way from keeping him from making the huge plays that you're also trying to keep Justin Jefferson from making. And oh, by the way, TJ Hockenson is back on the field and Jordan Addison's out there as well. So there's a lot of pieces to account for here, but Aaron Jones, as we've witnessed many, many times in the Bears-Packers series, can really take over a game if you let him.
That's one of those, what they call a Bears killer. That's what Aaron Jones has been ever since he started in Green Bay. He's just a guy that just has killed the Bears every single time they play him. I don't think he's quite what he was a couple of years ago, but he's still an above average running back that, like you said, you gotta contain. You know, especially, like, this is a game that you want, this is what we were hinting at earlier. You want this game to end up on the arm of Sam Darnold and make him make a mistake. You cannot let them just run the ball up and down the field, or it's gonna be a long day.
No doubt about it. Interesting milestone nugget here. I mentioned Tremaine Edmonds' name a moment ago. Tremaine Edmonds is about to play in his 100th career NFL game. Tremaine Edmonds just turned 26 years old in May. He becomes the youngest player in NFL history to reach 100 games played as long as he steps on the field on Sunday afternoon. That's a pretty wild stat to consider, getting to 100 games in your career at the age of 26. Mm-hmm. Tremaine Edmonds obviously needs to make a bigger impact for this defense, but pretty cool number there for him. As his career continues.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that I was really excited when the Bears signed him. I did not realize that he – I guess I should say I didn't realize that he'd accumulated that many games already. But, I mean, yeah, he's – it feels like he's been in the league for a while, which he has, but he's still so young. So he's one of those guys that came into the league fairly young. And, I mean, so you're right.
He was a captain at, like, age 21, I think, which is crazy.
Yeah, right? I mean, and, yeah, he's a guy that, like, he – he's one of those guys that like came into the league and was immediately pretty damn good. I think he was in the same draft class as Roquan Smith, right? So, you know, both those guys came in and made an immediate impact on the team. Also, Dan, before we get out of here, you have a special feature coming up this week in the Tribune.
It will be online Friday morning at ChicagoTribune.com. It will be in your Sunday newspaper. I'm excited about this one, and I'm a little bit bummed about it, too, because had the Bears been able to make a field goal on Sunday against the Packers, this is all we would have been talking about all week. And it's the clutch plays on the final drive between Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. And Rome, in particular, has a track record of stepping up in big moments, did it all throughout his final season at Washington a year ago as he helped the Huskies to the national championship game. When the game was on the line, Rome wanted the ball. When the ball went to Rome, Rome made a play, and he got his team in position to win football games. The same thing happened Sunday. The Bears just didn't make the kick to win the game. And this would have been all we're talking about. And I had a chance the last few days to talk with some, whether it's Cole or Rome or Caleb or Thomas Brown. The play call, 4th and 3, it's called Vegas, and it's a 4 verticals concept that they dug into. Cole Kmet said it came in so quickly and so decisively into the huddle from Thomas Brown. He called it a badass play call, which I loved because he had an ear-to-ear grin on his face where he was like, it was one of those, we talked about Thomas Brown earlier, the presence. It's one of those hell yeah moments like, all right, let's go. And it's the ultimate trust in your playmakers. Those are two rookies, but they're also two top 10 picks with a ton of talent. And you're saying, all right, fellas, go do this, you know, and Caleb gets the line before the snap. He sees his best matchup to the boundary side is Rome against Keyshawn Nixon. He sees Rome win immediately off the snap and throw his hand up, which you go watch the video of it. It's pretty cool to see Rome be like, throw it, man. And Caleb lets it fly. He knows in a worst case scenario, he's going to be able to draw a pass interference penalty. Instead, he puts a dot out there. Rome adjusts his body, hauls it in. It's 21 yards. And it's such a huge, huge completion in the big picture for the Bears, because this is your franchise quarterback and the receiver that you expect to be playing 10 years with him, connecting in such a big moment of a rivalry game. And Studs, this would have been the entire episode of this podcast today if we didn't have to clean up the mess of a 46-yard field goal that was kicked from the wrong hash with bad protection up front, and the Bears lost the 4th consecutive game.
Forget today. This would have been the conversation all week, man. That
it feels exciting to talk about, right? And you're like, God, this is a footnote on our week.
Yeah, it's the one thing that, I think, I can't remember if I said this earlier this week. Maybe I told it to you guys before we started recording. Like, the one thing that I wasn't even, that upset with the outcome of the game. I was more upset that we were robbed of this moment that Caleb had and that Rome had, of this like badass moment like that we've been begging for. Like, that kind of play right there, we've been begging for it for 2 years. Make a play when it matters the most. So you come back from 3rd and 19 to get this 4th and 3 play. You get this huge chunk play. It's one of those plays I was sitting on the couch at home, and it's one of those plays where you jump up from your couch and you say, let's fucking go. Like, I was convinced in that moment they were going to win the game, and then then the Keenan Allen play happens. I was, all right, and then they didn't run another play, and then, you know, the rest of the thing happened. But
that 4th down play call, it's a big balls play call, and it's players being like, yeah, let's do it, you know, and that's the mentality that I think that a lot of people are hoping that this Bears team can create in its identity, and not sort of get conservative and fear factor based and everything else that goes with it. You've got guys now, you have dudes on your offense that can win you football games. Let them win you football games. And in that moment, really cool to see the quarterback, meet that moment. And then Rome again, like, this is a dude that is leading the team in receiving right now and having a pretty good rookie year, all things considered. And to see that union coming together in the biggest moments possible, it's something that the Bears have to lean into and feel really good about.
Oh, yeah. Like, man, like, if there's one thing we can hopefully end up taking out of this season, it's that guys like Kalen Rome made a lot of progress and showed us that they are going to be the dudes to lead this franchise. Because, like, ultimately, a lot of these things we talk about matter. But if the quarterback is the dude, a lot of things look a lot better, even if you have some incompetency placed around the building. Like, it covers up a lot of things. It can't cover up everything. Like, the quarterback can't overcome complete incompetency at the top or all over the place. But, man, if you have, like, a great quarterback, not everything has to be perfect, because he covers up a lot of good things. And if
you can develop that trajectory where you're together, quarterback, receiver, for the longest haul, and their chemistry started on the plane ride to the combine, then you've got yourself something, right? Like, that's something that can be a lot of fun. By the way, Caleb did say that in that moment, their chemistry from just their relationship of building a friendship over the last 6 months comes into play, because you have faith in the other guy. He said they've been playing a lot of video games. I don't know how many video games they've been playing. It sounds like Call of Duty Black Ops, the new version that's beyond me, is out, and they've been playing that together. If that creates 21-yard gains on 4th-and-3 against the Packers, then keep it going.
There is a new Call of Duty that came out about 3 weeks ago. I don't know. I stopped playing Call of Duty a long time ago. I never really got that into it anyway, but I it was on my radar that it was out there. So, hey, good for them. I'll have to try to find them on I don't know if they play PlayStation. I'll try to find their gamer tags and we can there be friends.
So that's that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Dan? We ready to go?
I think we got it. We got it covered. It's time for Bears Vikings Sunday afternoon on the lakefront.
All right. Can't wait. It should be a game of football, that's for sure. So, all right, we'll go ahead and wrap these up here for Mark Grody, who had to bail earlier, and Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune. I'm Adam Tuzinski. I'm the producer of Take the North. You've been listening to Take the North. Download, listen, subscribe, tell a friend about the podcast. We appreciate everyone listening and to subscribing for those that already have. And we will talk to you on Sunday after the game.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.